Welcome to the Sydney Hems podcast. This is Cliff Reid, joined by Dr. Jeff Healy.
Hello.
Dr. Carl Harbig.
Hi, everybody.
Right, fellas, we had a really good chat in the coffee shop about scene times, and we thought we'd share some thoughts on the importance of minimising time spent on scene on a pre-hospital mission. So what are some of the themes that came up?
Well, I think it's true to say that EMS services are obsessed with this one single number. It's the one thing they can measure, and they sort of compare each other by their scene times and response times, but these are not the ultimate quality measure that we would want for a service. That said, anything that can minimise time wasted is an effective and important part of our pre-hospital care.
And I think one of the first things about it is how we measure our scene times and what they actually mean. And so many organisations will talk about the time of a 999 call or a 000 call coming in with the arrival of the first resource and so forth, and then the departure from scene. But actually, the time to intervention that would be life-saving or life-changing for that patient is a much more valid timescale of what you're going to do, but it's incredibly hard to measure. In fact, in one of the organisations that I've worked with in Kent, Surrey, Sussex, the director of the service, Malcolm Russell, did a test, and we tested all of the clocks in the system from the monitor to the aircraft to people's individual watches, and all of the times were out. So how you can measure a data point when no one comes from the same point is incredibly difficult. So the first stage of it, and that varied from up to 5 to 8 minutes, and the only thing, interestingly, that was really accurate was the iPhone, which is obviously centrally mediated in terms of its timing.
So I guess we're quite lucky in New South Wales because we have the ITIM app. We've got a dedicated smartphone app which has a timestamp feature on it, doesn't it? So if everyone used that, I guess there'd be some consistency in what time, according to the clock, is being recorded. But how do we define the scene time?
So that's important. And there's no general agreement around the world. But for our service, we really want people to be recording the same time every time. So when we talk about on-scene, it is at patient is the start of the on-scene time.
So it's not when the helicopter lands or the ambulance pulls up on scene?
No, there's often a delay from the time the vehicle stops till you can actually access the patient. So that's the at-patient time. And then when you depart scene, we're interested in the time you start moving away from where the patient currently is. And so that may be a different time from when the helicopter takes off or the road vehicle moves away.
Yeah, I guess so. There might be some examples where the helicopter's parked remotely from the scene and we're actually using a road ambulance to transfer this now stabilised and resuscitated patient to the aircraft. Departing scene time is when we're leaving in that vehicle, isn't it, rather than flying away.
Absolutely.
And the other thing I think is a real key component to scene time is having an idea from a physician paramedic team about how long it actually takes to do interventions, what interventions need to be done on scene and what can be done en route, and being realistic about it. Saying that we're going to RSI some person in 4 minutes total is unrealistic, not only to your team, but the team around you. And so they get a differential approach or an unrealistic appreciation of how long it's going to take to do something.
I would argue also that if you're spending only 4 minutes of assessment and preparation for an RSI, you're probably shortchanging those particular procedures. And those are periods of time that need to be spent managing the patient and not focusing on a single number, which is time on scene.
Yeah, I think that's really important. If you prioritise scene time at the expense of everything else, you'll get great figures, great numbers, but you'll have poorly resuscitated, inadequately assessed patients, and you're going to miss things and forget things, aren't you?
Definitely.
I think as an educator, I find it really interesting seeing the difference in how, certainly within the simulation environment, different students, different novices manage their scene time. Some clearly have a good grasp of it, and it will be part of their cognitive process, simultaneously managing the scene, but also thinking, how can we move forward? What's the next step? What's 2 steps ahead? What's our egress and so on? And yet others become totally embroiled in the clinical management of the patient, and scene times within the simulation setting just blow out, without any clear endpoint. Now, clearly it's a team sport. When we're talking about a novice individual joining the service, they're going to be with an experienced partner, potentially, and hopefully within the team. But I wanted to think about how you guys think. I mean, we'll nut down specific strategies and tips to offer people, I think, later on in this podcast. But what goes through your mind? How are your scene times kept to a minimum as very experienced pre-hospital professionals?
Well, for me, I really think that I'm making a very early assessment as to whether or not a patient needs an intervention. And if they do, is the time spent doing that intervention in the patient's best interest, or is this a patient who needs something else doing somewhere else? So if a patient has a penetrating wound to the chest and they're talking and alert, well, the intervention I might do on scene is only going to delay the definitive surgical management of that patient. As opposed to a head injured patient who may need interventions done on scene. And so it's all about whether time is it's like time's a currency. We're going to spend that currency on the intervention, or is it best saved for the patient transport?
And I think there's this concept that you've already touched on, Cliff, is sometimes it's a bit like a freight train and it's barreling along uncontrolled and it's hard to pull it up. And there are definitive strategies that I use in my head to try and make sure that the whole job's not running away from us and that time's being spent wasted. And things like discussing that with my team member about the interventions are going to make a difference, how long it's going to take, and being two steps ahead of the game the whole time. We're going to do X, and then we're going to do Y, and then we'll be transporting in the next 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And always having that as a focus of where we're going, a forward momentum towards hospital with interventions that are useful in that preceding period of time.
Yeah, I think I agree with all that, and it really comes down, doesn't it, to being a competent clinician. Because how can you make the judgment about what is a meaningful intervention that's appropriate to spend that currency of time on scene doing without knowing what the natural clinical course is of that patient's pathophysiology or pathology? And I love that term, meaningful intervention. That phrase, I think, was coined originally by Rod McKenzie in the UK. And to me, that's the essence of pre-hospital medicine. It's providing those meaningful interventions. And sometimes the meaningful intervention is a rapid extrication and get going, isn't it?
Yeah, I also think that when you talk about meaningful interventions, we can also talk about them from an organisational perspective. So one thing that we think is important is the standard operating procedures for major interventions, which define when these procedures are indicated. So people aren't having to make it up every time from scratch. From their experience, we're using the combined knowledge and experience of many clinicians in the service over many years, combined with evidence where possible.
Yeah, and that removes the individual confidence of an individual sometimes to have to make that decision, because that to and fro between doing something or not doing something is sometimes that vacillation that stifles productivity or movement forward. And people often talk about this concept of backing a horse and then coping with the side effects or the consequences of backing that horse. And that's a really important concept to think about. But you also have to be flexible, because if that horse that you backed in the first stage is certainly lame and at the back of the course, in pre-hospital medicine, it might be time to jump on another horse and make a valid decision that's in the best interest of that patient.
And but you've got to be able to have the horse put down. Is that your plan?
Well, look, I maybe something in the left in the ambulance or in the helicopter for the last resort to bring the curtains around the patient. No, you need to be flexible enough to be able to change your decision making process. Mm. But decision making and being decisive is really important.
So in terms of sort of cognitive processes, and I'm no expert on the psychology of this, but just to share from a personal point of view what goes through my head on a semi-conscious level, I find scene time is something that's like a clock ticking away in my head that's nagging. It's making a noise, for want of a better word. And it's just like when I've seen a patient in the ED, until I wash my hands, there's this nagging noise that I need to wash my hands before I do anything else, go and type some notes, go and see another patient, whatever. And it's just like that. The whole time I'm on scene, there's this tick, tick, tick in my head, scene time, scene time, scene time, scene time. That doesn't distract me, but it reminds me constantly. And I don't know if part of that comes from training or part of it comes from just experience. And over the years, developing that sensitivity to how things can blow out if you get sucked in to certain interventions, and also sensitivity to how your team is perceived and the contribution you're making is viewed by the other rescuers on scene. Because they know that when a medical team arrives, there is a big danger that they're going to be there for a while doing advanced interventions that they may or may not agree with. So just having a little bit of your cognitive capacity ticking away, reminding you of the importance of scene time, I think isn't harmful.
I also think if you set a clear team target in terms of time, you actually bring people along with you. If you say, I want to be off scene in 15 minutes having RSI this patient, people understand what it is you're doing, can work towards a team-based time target rather than time seeming to pass by without much activity.
Yeah, so I think that's helpful. So we'll move into some strategies then, with that being the first one, maybe it's something we can offer relative newcomers to pre-hospital care, things you can take away to help your scene time. So I love that one, setting a time target. Mike Clancy was my mentor in the emergency department in the UK, and with a big resus, he would always keep asking the question, why are we still here? Why are we still here? And you had to answer it with a good reason for why you were still here and not in CT or theatre or on ICU. And he was really good at setting time-based, action-specific targets. I'd like this patient intubated and in the CT scanner within the next 20 minutes. Really helpful for the whole team to be on the same page, which, of course, is about sharing mental models, isn't it?
One of the dangers of that, though, is that you can be setting unrealistic targets and losing your teamwork. And part of this maximal simultaneous effort is to recruit those people on scene and get them as allies in moving this patient forward. And if you lose that allied strength, it can sometimes hamper you in terms of moving forward. So we need to be realistic in our goal setting with our times. And that means knowing how long it takes realistically to do these interventions.
I guess one thing's really important to bear in mind, particularly again for the non-expert, would be to always work within your own bandwidth, your cognitive bandwidth. Don't exceed your cognitive capacity. And by that I mean, if you're absolutely obsessed with the scene time, that's going to preoccupy your thought processes and that's going to distract you from good quality assessment and management. And of course, that's why we offer these cognitive prostheses, don't we? To offload your cognitive demands. For example, using checklists, using standard operating procedures, sharing a mental model with a team so they can come back and remind you of what you've now forgotten you've just said because it was 5 minutes ago.
And that's another thing where you can work as a team. If your team member is maximally maxed out their bandwidth, being able to recognise that in your team member, and that's where the doctor paramedic role really comes into its own, is being able to identify when the other person in your team is maxed out and giving them strategies to be able to cope with what's maxing them out to be able to continue moving forward.
And one of the biggest differences between a novice and an expert in terms of scene management is this maximal simultaneous activity. And what you see in simulation, for example, is the expert has everyone working and the novice is doing the same job, but they've only got one or two people doing things. Everyone else is standing around watching. And that's a real clue that they're not using the team as effectively as possible.
And we find that one of the real kickers for me is the delegation of jobs to people that may or may not be the best at doing that.
Mm.
And the one thing that we see repeatedly, and I see quite often, is intravenous access. And it's often given to someone that may or may not be the best person to be able to get that IV access. But it's such a crucial role in moving forward that if that doesn't get achieved, then it can hamper you in the long run in terms of your overall scene management. So picking the right person to do the right job when you're delegating is a real, real vital skill.
Yeah, I think we try and tell our teams, do the things that only you can do and delegate the other things. All right, someone else can cut clothes off. Someone else can put an oxygen mask on. Someone else can go and get another cylinder. But no one outside our team knows our equipment, so they can't do our RSI equipment dump, for example.
And that's a real important thing that you've touched on is equipment and equipment design and also system design. If you've got an ultrasound machine that takes 5 minutes to turn on and before you can even use it as a diagnostic tool, then it's going to hamper you in your scene time. So you've got to engineer your workflow to be really useful in the way that you're using your equipment or the way that you're designing your systems.
And you work with paramedics who are very expert in the field of pre-hospital resuscitation. And they're like ninjas. They literally move around the scene. Things seamlessly happen. You don't need to ask for them. You're not having to communicate every single thing that requires to be done. They're actually controlling the scene throughout, and that's a huge advantage. It saves a significant amount of time.
And so what are some of the sort of logistic things that those ninja paramedics will be managing while the doctor's embroiled in some of the clinical management?
So one of the big things is setting your equipment up in the right place first time. Everything comes in, everything's done the same way each time. There's access to all of the equipment at any one time. There's not bags spread out around the environment. And a rapid movement through the pathway that's been planned. And, for example, a kit dump of the rapid sequence intubation can be done in a few minutes. But if that requires a person to know exactly what they're doing, having practiced it, trained for it, and put it into practice.
And the other big thing that they're really, really good at, and this is something that I see time and time and time again, is you get a piece of equipment out and the bag is then zipped back up and ready to be transported off scene. It's like, it's not just getting it out and putting it on, it's about packing up and getting ready to go. And that mentality from the very start, how you put your equipment down, often determines how you pick it up and get it out of scene. And so not taking every piece of equipment into scene to the then has to be lugged back if it's not necessary, is something that comes with experience. Certainly you don't want to be left lugging lots of different things unnecessarily, but it's the economy of movement, it's the swiftness of what they do that saves time and makes a big difference to the overall scene time.
And that's a key thing, isn't it, as you've said, that differentiates the experienced practitioner from the novice, is that ability to plan one, two or more steps ahead. And particularly with the paramedics that we work with, you'll often find when you're doing the clinical management that not only all the stuff that you've just mentioned is laid out and sorted and ready for removal, but the actual egress of the patient has been planned and arranged. Gates have been opened, doors have been opened, things have been moved out of the way, an exit path has been established, the trolleys are in the right place, the vehicles have been moved closer so we can get that patient in the vehicle. And this has all happened, you know, while you're just looking at the patient, but they're thinking so many steps ahead that when you're good to go, you can go.
And thinking more steps ahead all the way through to hospital, that's the key to the patient's pathway through the their care. The other thing I was going to mention, that the communications are really important. So there's a whole range of communications we need to do, and some of those can't be done easily once, for example, you're in flight. And so making those comms calls really early, getting the hospital revved up and ready to receive your patient is a really good way to save time.
And that's a really important point of differentiating pre-hospital care and in-hospital care, is that there's a continuum that doesn't stop when they go through the doors of the emergency department. If they need to go rapidly to theatre, they need to have rapidly massive transfusion protocols initiated. Again, it's being two steps ahead of the game the whole time and anticipating, planning and getting the forces mobilised to be able to expeditiously get that intervention for that patient right.
Right, well, I found this a helpful discussion, and I might try and summarise some of these points then about minimising scene time. So first of all, we should stress that minimising scene time is important, but it's not the absolute priority. Looking after the patient is the priority, and sometimes it's appropriate to stay on scene and stabilise, particularly the airway and breathing. Having established that, it's important to realise that you've got to be clinically competent enough to decide which interventions are meaningful and which can wait. And having that clinical expertise really is all important. Once you've decided that, very important early on to share that mental model. Get the team on the same page. Establish some targets. Establish some time limits for those targets. And then to get stuff happening, maximise simultaneous activity. And of course, delegating appropriately. Get everyone busy, but busy with things that they can do to the best of their abilities. Optimizing the layout of your equipment, planning ahead if things take time to turn on, getting stuff ready to be packed away as soon as it's used, and planning that egress of the patient and of the vehicle, and having a good communication plan, whether it's to the pilots or the receiving hospitals, to get those next steps in the patient's pathway ready for you. Any other closing comments?
Just to say, time is money. Time is currency. So use it wisely. Spend it wisely. Think of it that way.
Awesome.
Time is the healer of all wounds. Profound. Let's finish there, everybody. And we'll talk to you again soon.